Coaches. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to From the Trenches, real life in the accounting industry. I'm David Boyer from Sequel CFO. I'm joined here with Paul Meisner from Freedom Accounting System, and we are powered by BGL Corp, Australia's leading superannuation and compliance software. Paul, you've finally given me the tick of approval to say it. What a big week it's been in accounting.
I think it has. And David, thank you. Welcome. Hello, all. Yeah, David, you like to say that it's been a big week. This week, I did. I'm finally in agreeance with you. Big news from the ATO, raids, multi-million dollar buyouts. There's polls. There's all sorts of stuff. And we've developed the blueprint for the firm of the future. We've got a diagram on the board behind us.
There is a Venn diagram on the board.
All happening. Now, we are starting with an exclusive. We are starting...
Let me wind you up.
Okay.
Last week, I made fun of you and said I walked into your office and you had Excel spreadsheets open, you had ATO... I'm in the ATO data, Dave. I'm looking at the ATO data, which usually ends in me just listening to you complain about something. But this time you latched on. You latched on. You have taken a begrudging view to the claim that tax agents are doing the wrong thing with work-related expenses. This is not the first time you've done a bit of investigative reporting. You have on this occasion, and you have landed an interview with the Deputy Commissioner for Individuals, Alison Lendon, of ATO fame. Can you be an ATO fame? Of course you can.
I think so.
And you hit her between the eyes with your research on whether or not tax agents were doing the wrong thing with work-related claims. Well done on the work. Well done on the interview. Do you want to tell us some snippets and where listeners can get that interview?
It's going to be out on our channels, absolutely, David. But look, I did this, and I'll start this by I'm a little disappointed in the professional bodies because I think this is where they should be. They need to be across this far better than they are. Here's the thing: the non-business individual tax gap report came out. Lots of figures being thrown around. It was massively in the media, etc., etc. I wasn't happy with what we were being told, so I actually did some digging. And David, this led to an email that I had drafted to a few of my contacts at the tax office, a couple of assistant commissioners. And I wanted to confirm. And so we have got the figures that haven't even been given to the professional bodies yet, David. We have ATO confirmation that their internal numbers believe that for every dollar of work-related expenses claimed, 45 cents, nearly half of every single dollar everyone claims, isn't allowed.
Boom.
Can we just think about that for a second?
I want to think about why you think this is somebody else's fault other than tax agents who sign off on the lodgements.
This is, and look, the tax gap, as you'll hear in the interview, was an economic exercise designed to take a very small, we talk about the random engagement program. There was a small lot of desktop audits that were done. The economists have got out and extrapolated this.
Oh, well, if a mathematician said it.
Out of $21 billion that are claimed in work-related expenses, David, they reckon that $10 billion of that is incorrect. And by incorrect, I mean either never should have been claimed, absolutely wrong, or their big issue, as you listen to the thing, was their substantiation. But the thing for me is I almost don't care whether the economical calculation of this stacks up, whether or not this was right. If the ATO are working off the number that almost half of every dollar claimed as work-related expenses, we are in for some of the big, like, it's not a political, not a great political climate to change the rules around work-related expenses.
No, it's not changing the rules, it's enforcing them.
Half of every claim is wrong. My argument, where are the professional bodies? Seriously, because these people are the ones that were... They have never checked CPD properly.
For work-related expenses.
But
when was the last time work-related expenses changed? Seriously, has it changed since I went to uni? It would be the least change deduction in all of tax law.
All of the professional bodies have been saying, don't worry about tax. Everyone's been saying, don't worry about tax.
No, nobody said you can't skimp on CPD. I think, Paul, I respect your argument about where are the bodies. This is a basic deduction, and I think that in general tax agents have got lax. They have accepted a lower standard of, as you said, validation and substantiation.
Yep.
And have a lower, what's the word, maybe a casual approach to CPD on some of the basics. And maybe a big refresher course is needed if 50% of them are doing the wrong thing.
I'm out there saying, and I've spoken clearly to the ATO about this, that the professional bodies, I don't think, are filling up to their end of the bargain.
On work-related expenses.
Well, just in general training. CA has not had a public practice conference. We've had to run our own, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, that annoys me, but that is big money and we could be in for a lot of problems if we don't get that sorted. But listen to the interview. David, best on ground.
Best on ground for me. Bombshell news in the cloud accounting area. Xero has made their biggest acquisition ever. It was reported as biggest acquisition, but it might be the only acquisition. I don't know if Xero's ever bought anything before.
PayCycle.
The payroll. Okay. This is the biggest acquisition they've bought.
Workflow Max.
Other than those.
Anyway, keep going.
They've bought HubDoc, the accounts payable add-on, to bring it in-house. HubDoc currently sits in the Xero HQ ecosystem, so it's sort of the tick of approval from Xero. It's a good product. It's fascinating because it competes with Receipt Bank. It's in the same area. Receipt Bank also sits in Xero's HQ suite of preferred apps, and it gives you a few other features as well if you run your practice on Xero Practice Manager. Paul, it's a massive announcement. It's a 94 million AUD deal, which is a lot of coin. My Twitter exploded with people talking about this transaction. Lots of thoughts. Where does this leave Receipt Bank? Where does this leave other people who compete in the add-on ecosystem if the big software companies are just going to make an acquisition? And you'd wonder how the other competitor is going to compete. There are three big software companies in Australia: MYOB, Xero, Intuit. Receipt Bank presumably is now on the outer with Xero if they've got an integrate. Well, we don't know what the integration is going to look like, but it's a logical extension of the news. And we just received news today that MYOB now has its own fetching feature. Now, what fetching is it goes directly to the root source and it brings in an invoice or a bank statement into the system. We just got news from MYOB. I think this is a From the Trenches exclusive. They now fetch from Reece Plumbing. So all of the tradies out there, and there are tens of thousands of them. So it's a big week, Paul, for the accounts payable add-ons and accounts payable processing in the cloud accounting area.
Look, I think it'll be very interesting to see what Xero do with this. They had, I think they'll admit limited success in trying to implement or trying to bring the payroll solution. There's probably other reasons for that, but bring the payroll solution into Xero. They also had some issues with bringing in Workflow Max, in terms of that. Be very interesting to see whether they run it as whether they continue to run it as standalone, bring it in into Practice Manager. And of course, Xero have really told the market that practice management software is free. So that will be exceptionally interesting.
There's a lot of speculation on what this means for Receipt Bank. Receipt Bank raised $50 million last year. I think they can stand on their own two feet. You've got to wonder, if Xero went and bought HubDoc, did they talk to Receipt Bank? Did they talk to some of the other AP? It's just, I don't think AP has ever been as sexy in the world of accounting. I dropped the word sexy in accounting a lot, Paul.
Don't know why. Don't know why. Anyway, that will be interesting, but congratulations to HubDoc. Certainly a good story out of Toronto.
Best on ground.
Toronto. Best on ground for me.
Hey, is curling big in Toronto?
Big, massive. Canada, home of curling.
Really?
Originated in Scotland, but
it's already too much talk home, about home curling. Remind me never to ask about that
I'm
again.
On my way to curling tonight. I know. Very much. Best on ground for me, ATO raids. Now, ATO raids probably shouldn't get onto the best on ground, but they are. Look, I think this was really interesting. This was big news. And we also have we had an interview with one of the assistant commissioners for tax agents. the 2 days after these raids happen, and he spoke to us. The episode will drop very shortly. Well connected, the trenches are this week, but 250 ATO officers hit 11 sites, including offices and houses, in a coordinated attack. Attack's probably the wrong word. In a coordinated swoop at the same time. Now, these powers are not taken lightly. These powers are powerful, given that they can knock on the door and have entry.
I want to know, what were the ATO raiders wearing? Were they wearing SWAT outfits?
I asked.
Bulletproof vests?
I asked. No.
So armed with Super Soaker 50s?
They do not have... they do not have spray jackets with their logo on it, apparently. I asked.
But isn't that the whole point, so that when the news crews get there, the government agency gets all the credit that they're the agency who are there?
I asked. I went to that level of detail. I asked and no. Sadly, no uniform.
Well, the ATO logo is really colourful now. So it would be nice if they turned up for a raid and it's like fluoro pink.
So maybe. Yeah,
turquoise.
Anyway, we joke about this, but this was a group of tax agents, and look, tax agents lodge 98% of business tax returns. So I think we shouldn't be surprised
raid's a bit excessive? You know, they kind of just, it's an accountant office. They didn't barricade the door down and swoop down.
But they're allowed
like
to.
Like Batman.
They're allowed to if they're refused entry, apparently. Companies that promote these phoenixing activities where you go in and create a massive debt and then sink the company and start afresh, this needs to be outlawed, and I commend the ATO for getting this done.
But when they brought out new anti-phoenixing laws 2 months ago and I put in all my best on ground, you said it's not going to do anything and who cares, it doesn't matter.
That was a hotline. That was because it was a hotline. Anyway, moving on. Good, bad, ugly. Or again, their poll is available at gbuhq.com. /poll link in the show notes. Get amongst it, accounts. I did it again this year. Yes, it involves some numbers about your firm. Really, I remember doing it a couple of years ago and kind of then logging out thinking, oh, it's just too hard. It really did not take me much more than 5 or 6 minutes fill in.
You don't have to give financial information on the good, bad, ugly report. Like, not detailed P&Ls. It's just high-level numbers.
It's not super high numbers. Like there are,
like as it, I get, like I don't have to bet, I don't have to show the skeletons of my firm to participate. Is what I'm getting, because that's what a lot of people object to.
Yeah, and look, you have to show a bit, and I guess to get the level of data, you need to show a certain level of data. I mean, I think that it's surveys about intention or what you're thinking of doing or what you might do don't have weight. These surveys, because they require some information, require weight. Look, use round numbers, you know, but try to contribute to the survey, because honestly, it the results, if we can get the numbers who you do the survey up, these numbers and this information is really, really important.
This is a great survey. We know the process. We know the guys behind it. It's very valuable for benchmarking and working out where what you can do with your firm, but it's only as good as the volume of people who participate from the trenches, throw their full support behind it.
And this is the good, bad, and the ugly. And we are not taking any money for this. There's no kickbacks or anything. But this is the only survey that I haven't had a question mark about people's motives. This is the only survey that I haven't said, oh, there's a direction that they want to answer. I think some of the other ones for me, it's sort of whether the questions are worded in a certain way. Good, bad, ugly, just they just want the answers and they do some interesting thing with the data. Let's move on to worst on ground. David, forced retirement.
KPMG has effectively forced retirement for their partners at the ripe old age of 53. 53, Paul.
That's young.
It's very young. I'm going to be 53 soon. I'm not even 40 yet, but I can feel it's imminent. It's an amazing story where at 53 years old, KPMG, I don't know, I'm not going to say pushing their partners out. There's an article in the AFR that we're reporting on. But what's interesting about it is Grant Thornton and the other mid-tiers, they're just swooping on these partners with great credibility, big four experience, and more importantly, a client list. So it seems like a baffling thing. For me personally, I'm very involved in recruiting senior people. SQL CFO only has CFOs with at least 20 years experience. I think that ageism is nonsense. I think it's a cop-out that you're not prepared to train people on new ways of doing things. I think that most people I've come across are very open to new ideas, very open to reskilling and relearning. And I find it quite amazing that KPMG are letting talented people leave, because I think people forget, Paul, with all of the talk around technology, we're a knowledge-based business. We make money off knowledge and nothing else, as we're going to talk about in our Firm of the Future a bit later on. So I think it's great that people, our mature workers, are kicking on and getting lots of opportunity, although I dare say an ex-KPMG partner wouldn't struggle for a gig walking out of KPMG.
53, I mean, kind of like mature worker, like really, I think that's how. A couple of issues here for me, obviously the unfair dismissal, you know, big companies just enforcing this kind of thing just solely because their business model needs to promote partners quicker than it can get rid of them, than they can retire on their own. Certainly, I think it's too early. Certainly, I think it's massively unfair. Great work. I mean, Grant Thornton must just be sitting there going, take a pick.
Licking their chops.
Take a pick of the bunch. Darren Scammell, who was in the AFR article link in the show notes, was the most recent president of Chartered Accountants Australia New Zealand. Terrific guy. I know him. He's on the regional council with me. Had a great chat with him. I was actually surprised to read he was 53, to be honest, having met him. But anyway, I think that's interesting and always surprises me when these big end. You know, if you had to, you know, let's say you said no to a franchisee who was 53.
Yep.
And they went and rang up Fair Work. Legitimately, you know, Fair Work could come and say, hey, David, you know, was that you're not looking for it. But what I'm saying is, if you were accused of knocking back someone who was 53, they would be all over you.
Why doesn't aren't sound they, good, does it?
Would they be all over KPMG?
Well, if the AFR says that it's an unlawful clause in their contract that says that partners have to retire at 58. And they're enforcing that despite it being unlawful, quoting the AFR.
I know, so, but who's...
I think KPMG thinking they're above Fair Work.
Who is holding
Very
them to it?
Interesting. Anyway. I mean, if KPMG was a franchise system, parliamentary inquiry into this. Guaranteed.
Yeah, I think franchisees have got a little bit more problems.
It's got a few more prickles around the edges.
With probably a golden handshake that would keep even the most firm people... quiet, obviously undisclosed.
My other worst on ground, hilarious story out of the West. They do things differently over in Perth. Thumping 18-year-olds on the AFL field is something that's in vogue at the moment. But Ernst & Young, there's a big event that happens in the West called the Diggers and Dealers event. And it's everyone in the who's who of the mining industry. And as you can probably imagine, diggers, aren't of the same variety as your corporate types at Ernst & Young. They were having a big event to support the Diggers and Dealers Mining Forum, of which EY seems to be a sponsor in Kalgoorlie. Kalgoorlie's known for two things, mining, and I think it's got more prostitutes per square metre than anywhere else in Australia. EY have moved their function because their function was going to be next to a Diggers and Dealers mining event that had, to quote them, scantily clad women, and an EY spokesman said it wasn't on brand. It's just this great, rare moments where cultures collide, even though they're kind of working for the same end result.
They love their clients right up until their clients. Anyway, interesting. My worst on ground is... LinkedIn for me this week became a little bit argumentative, like Twitter, just a little bit, not a whole lot. Look, I liked an article, and we're not going to go too far into the article because this could start some stuff as well. There was an article from the BBC, mansplaining explained in one simple chart. Now, for the listeners, I had to explain what mansplaining was to David because David didn't understand the term. But once we got through that, we were all right.
I think you should explain it to the listeners. If I didn't know what it is, maybe other people
mansplaining know. Mansplaining is the concept that men can explain things in an overly condescending way to females who without actually finding out whether they needed explaining or not. Generally, it's the unnecessary explaining of concepts to women. I found this, and the reason, so I hit liked on LinkedIn, it was because I actually, the decision tree for me asked some important questions that I thought were relevant. Did the lady ask you to explain it? Do you have more relevant experience? Would most men with her education and experience already know this? Did you ask if she needed it explaining? Now, those are some key terms that I thought were well considered. People should consider that, especially the first one, because I'm sure there's some people out there, whether it's men or talking to men or women, that you kind of think, thanks for explaining that to me, I didn't really need it. Anyway, I got a call from a female friend of mine. This is the reason for the worst on ground. I got a call from a female friend of mine saying, look, I saw you like that article on LinkedIn. Goes, did you read some of the comments? And I admitted, I said, no, I didn't really read the comments. She explained to me, and then I went and had a look at the comments. It got wild in there.
Like, it was hashtag Q&A when Kwanda's on ABC. Oh,
there were some ferals in it. And again, it was like in an almost ironical sense, men in there, oh, it's not all men, and let me explain something to you. You know, like, I have this experience. Anyway, it got wild. Like, there was sexually charged comments and all sorts of things. And
on LinkedIn?
I hadn't seen that before.
The professional network where things are more permanent than Twitter.
Is LinkedIn becoming like Twitter? Anyway, it was interesting for me. I thought it was an important lesson on mansplaining, to be honest. But the comments got well out of hand.
We've done a show earlier in our recording where we spoke about, are we capable of quality online debate? This is certainly suggesting that we're not. LinkedIn, you don't get a lot of social issues on LinkedIn other than the casual self-congratulatory act of philanthropy. Occasionally you see that on LinkedIn. Very rare you actually see a social issue discussed. And LinkedIn, you know, almost like the bastion of safe conversation and keeping on theme. Apparently not.
I know. It got out of hand. First time I'd seen it for a while. Now, in-depth topic. Let's have a look at this. Because I think we've got a good one, David. I think we've got a very, very good one. We have delved into the concept of what makes the firm of the future.
I need to explain the scene. We are currently, for those who came to our event, you've been to the From the Trenches studios. It's in this dark room with an ominous light. Paul Meisner sitting in front of his microphone. Behind him is a Venn diagram, three wheels of the Venn diagram. The one closest to him says his two favourite words, sales and marketing.
I had to throw them in.
What this idea is, let's just introduce the idea quickly, because you showed this to me literally on the back of an envelope and I said, oh, that's brilliant, let's do this. This is fantastic. You've got three Venn diagrams, okay? I'm going to describe what they are and then you're going to talk about the intersections. The first one, sales and marketing, relates to top-line growth. Technology relates to how you do your work. And technical knowledge, the core thing that we actually sell. Now, each one of those things intersect. We both believe that if you get the three of those things right, you are a firm of the future. But what we're going to discuss is what happens if you only have two of the three.
We are. So, to give a little bit more of a backstory in terms of this, there is a Japanese concept meaning a reason for being. It's called ikigai. Probably murdered that pronunciation. But anyway, I have carried these wheels around as a picture in my wallet for years. It covers what you are good at doing, what you have a passion for, and what the world needs. What you can make money from is the third one.
Oh, so, don't forget what the world needs.
And what the world needs is the fourth one.
I'm very passionate about...
Anyway, but it's trying to find the intersection. But more importantly, what do the intersections of two out of the three do? So here is what I have developed on the back of a napkin. We will share the photos on the website as well. So here are the areas. David?
Yes, go on.
Here are the areas that I think the cornerstones to a firm. You don't have to have all of them. Anyway, these are the corners. This is what we're starting with. Circle one at the top. Technical knowledge. I'm calling this tax technical. For other advisory businesses, virtual CFO can be data analytics or understanding those models.
Being good at your job.
Yeah, absolutely. What you actually, the physical,
yeah.
The actual knowledge to do your job. The nerdiness, the geekiness.
Being able to deliver what your marketing team says you're going to deliver.
Exactly. Then the second circle is technology. So such a big part now of firms, as much in the efficiency and effectiveness of the firm as anything else. The other circle, the dark art of sales and marketing. And those are the three areas we're running with, David. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's not that we don't need to deep dive into each of these three. It's what happens if you have a disbalance or an imbalance of those three that comes out. So can I introduce the first one, Paul? The first
Absolutely.
Imbalance. If you have a technology-led, so you buy a very modern firm, a heavy sales and marketing, heavy focus on growth, but you are weak on technical knowledge, this is the type of firm that you and I despise, but we know that they're out there. You have what we call a chop shop. You get the work in, you stuff it up because you don't have the technical knowledge. There's no shortage of work because your sales and marketing is working really well. You're using technology to spin through it as quickly as possible, but it's all wrong. You got a chop shop.
You do have a chop shop. If you mix technology and sales and marketing without any technical knowledge, very, very true.
Does any good come from that, if that chop shop model?
Growth, apparently, and I think you might win an award. Fastest growing or something, possibly. Anyway. Whoops. Anyway, I want to get to the other one, which was kind of fun. So what we've labelled is where you have technical knowledge and you've been sold the dream. You've been sold the sales and marketing hype. You've bought the marketing. What you end up with is just being overworked. Your clients tend to be overworked, perhaps under-delivered in terms of because you are so busy, not necessarily profitable, could be hard times.
Because you still got to remember that the biggest challenge the firms say that they have is access to staff. If you can't get access to staff and you don't have the technology in your business, it's taking you the same amount of time to do the extra work that your sales and marketing is delivering for you. The only way to do it is to work more. Now, that's okay for H&R Block at this time of the year because it's tax season and that's just what they do. That is the natural seasonality of an H&R Block, iReturn type business. You're busy for about 3 months, which is now, right in the middle of it. Yep. But if you're just a regular firm, that it's just not sustainable because in businesses that grow too fast, often you'll find they'll just turn off a marketing tap because they can't deal with the work. That's what will happen in this. If you are overworked, you are sure to be under-delivering, whether it be letting down clients or making technical mistakes.
Absolutely. Now, David, let's get into the other. So there are two more. There is the intersection of another two, technical knowledge and technology, which I want to talk about now. And then we will talk about the intersection of all three because
The Taj Mahal.
Maybe or mightn't be. I want to give some context to that because I have an interesting view on that as well.
It is if you want it to be.
Let's
sounded so sleazy. We're talking about accounting firms. How sleazy can an accounting firm be?
Let's look at technical knowledge.
Dennis DeNudo of accounting.
Let's look at the intersection of technical knowledge and technology because I think this is really interesting and this is probably where I am at the moment. You know, not necessarily into the sales and marketing, can't find staff, etc. So here is where you get a really efficient, really effective, and I find, provided you can get some other cogs in place, a very profitable firm. Doesn't have the growth, largely, I don't care. Time with family, etc. So I think this can be, I think for the right selection. You know, for me, if I was gonna miss the middle in any direction, this would be it. You know, you don't want to be overworked, you clearly don't want to be a chop shop. You know, this could be efficient, effective. You know, that's where I like. Now, the interesting, so talking about the intersection of technical knowledge, technology, and sales and marketing, what I find really interesting is, for me, I sort of stay in that technical technology join, but then the beauty of it is, depending on where your firm is in terms of capacity, talent, whether you want to have a growth spurt, not have a growth spurt, you can then find that sales and marketing. But I kind of think if you don't have the mix of technical knowledge with technology, once you add that sales and marketing, something's going to go wrong.
I agree completely. What you've then got with technical, if you've got technical knowledge and you've got technology in your firm and you have an existing pool of clients, or you've just bought a firm that's not using modern technology, this is the way to become super profitable. It's by getting the same amount of work out the door, but doing it in a quicker amount of time. Because whilst everybody can talk about value pricing, at the end of the day, we make our money by maximising the amount of dollars we can bring in one workday per billable employee. That's the cost factor of our businesses. It's just inescapable. If you can do this, now the good news for this is there's lots of help you can get on the technology front. You can go join Heather Smith's Facebook group, Cloud Accounting. You can go to all their meetups. You can go to ZeroCon, which is coming up. You can go to World Congress of Accounting. You can go to QuickBooks Connect. You can go to MYOB. What's the MYOB one called? I've forgotten. It's coming.
Practice Connect.
And you can find out, because all the add-ons that help you do it are there. And I guarantee you, if you want to move your practice to the cloud, call up Xero, MYOB, QuickBooks, whatever you're going to choose, you and I choose Xero, their account managers are going to be all over you, and they're going to make it easy, and they will make the training easy for you.
In the technology part or
in the technology part?
In the technology part. I was going to say, yeah, absolutely. Anyway, let us know what you think. We came up with this. I've loved this concept of the pattern of the three intersecting circles. What do you think? Listeners, do you reckon we've nailed it?
We'll get to the Taj Mahal. We haven't spoken about the Taj Mahal.
Oh, sorry. I thought we did.
Anyway, no, if you get it all right.
You get it all right. Look, I think
you've got talented staff, you've got efficient systems, and you've got lots of work coming in the door. This is a sign of a fast growth, modern firm that you and I think is the firm of the future.
Scalable growth.
Scalable growth.
Yeah, the depth that is lacking from this clearly is that technical knowledge is not just the type of knowledge. As you grow, you've got to have the same technical knowledge along your team. So, yeah, certainly the technical knowledge is not just at the top level. It's got to be throughout the organisation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Et cetera, et cetera. I think over the top of this, the two things that accounting firms really get wrong in, and I have, this is because I have through the journey, client standards is letting too many clients in just because you get a referral or you get a new client inquiry and you feel you have to take it up. I think that hurts, you know, breaks a lot of this process. I also think that pricing is an issue. There happens to be an ebook out, Freedom Accounting System, that solves some of that. But certainly the firm of the future, and we haven't spoken about talent, you know, talent kind of, and it comes into, as we said, comes into that technical module. I think as you add the sales and marketing, it then comes back and puts real pressure on any cracks in the technology, and certainly comes back and puts some real pressure on any cracks you have in technical knowledge.
Agree.
So you need to always be agile.
Agile. Constant improvement.
And having a feedback loop to test that your technology is still right and your technical knowledge is still right.
You know, the way you and I describe feedback loops, just talk to your team. It doesn't have to be any more complicated than that. Just talk to them. All right, that's it. We'd love your feedback on what we think Firm of the Future looks like. This is not sponsored by Intuit, but they have applications open for the Firm of the Future at the moment. Last year's Aussie winner, Lalette Kalesia, who's been on our show a lot, got a trip to San Jose. There's over $135,000 up for grabs for you and your client. I think they're sending your client over. The reason why I'm promoting this is I want an Australian to win this damn award. We are so far ahead on cloud practices. We are so far advanced on practice management for the US. Even, you know, I've spoken to all of the big guys in the US. They're still trying to work out ways to make checks efficient. How are we losing to these guys? Come on, Aussies. If you've got a great firm, get on there and win.
Otherwise, we look out for our special episodes. We've got two ATO episodes coming up. Big things coming. Thank you all. Have an awesome week. Thanks again for listening to another episode of From the Trenches. David and I love hearing feedback from all of our listeners. If you ever have any content, feel free to reach out. I can be reached at Paul Meissner on LinkedIn or on Twitter at Fiveways Group.
I'm on Twitter at David Boyar, B-O-Y-A-R, on LinkedIn, David Boyar.